It undoubtedly knows. Sister Agica raised her voice. All witnesses in an Inquisition grand trial wear the silver chains during their testimony to bind them to the ancestors' truth. Chazal's gaze flickered towards the gathered lords. With a forced smile, she presented her wrists to Sarah, and the guard dutifully bound the thin chain around the royal wrists, wrapping them half a dozen times before leaving the ends hanging loose. Now, prime instigator, Brother Pelter positioned himself before the Emperor's sister. Honorable Chazal, if I may... You didn't ask me how I plead. Abbess Glass raised her voice just as she would on seeing novices misbehaving in the cloister. Brother Pelter rounded on her, mouth working but managing to articulate no words. It is customary. Sister Agica nodded. Pelter gathered himself. My apologies. I had assumed that you would try to cling to a claim of innocence and force us to the unpleasantness of putting an abbess of the church to the sternest of questioning. Am I to understand that you wish to plead guilty and move directly to sentencing? Abbess Glass let her gaze wander from Pelter's flushed cheeks to the men and women on the Lord's benches. Chazal had done an impressive job to array such a large fraction of the Sis beneath her roof. Some, of course, would never place themselves in her power, but many had decided to entrust themselves, old allies, new allies, or just houses with sufficient confidence in their own power and in Chazal's fear of the Emperor's censure, to keep them safe. The Sis have a saying, "Murder the wrong man, and he'll kill you." I am not pleading guilty, no. Pelter threw up his hands with a noise of disgust. So you claim innocence and waste our time. He turned back to Chazal, mouth opening to speak. I'm not pleading innocent, either, Glass said. Pelter didn't bother to turn, but he did lift his voice. Your grasp on church law seems to be as feeble as your grasp on church doctrine, heretic. Some among the lords laughed at that. Glass spotted Arabella Jotsis and Joelle Namsis sitting just a few seats apart on benches to the left of the lords, Terramensis between them. I'm pleading special dispensation, Glass said. Special? Pelter turned back to her with a bewildered smile, hands circling to bring forth some explanation. Special dispensation, Glass said. I have permission from High Priest Nevis and High Inquisitor Gemmon to practice heresy. A rumble went through the crowd, heated muttering, glances exchanged. Why would? Pelter abandoned questions in favor of accusation. No, you don't. That's a lie. You expect us to believe such nonsense just because you have the audacity to speak it? I have written permission, signed and sealed. Glass met the Inquisitor's stare. No, you do not, Pelter shouted. Then more quietly. We searched you. Attica struck the table before her. Produce these documents or fall silent, Abbess. Such claims cannot stand upon the word of the accused. My hands are tied, Glass lifted her wrists. But if someone were to reach into my habit... She pressed her hands to her left side. The document had spent most of the journey strapped high on her left thigh, but in the seclusion of a palace privy, Glass had placed it for more ready access just before coming to trial. Sarah clanked across, meeting Glass's eyes with a puzzled look as she retrieved the parchment, then passed it to the judges and returned to her station. Pelter eyed his colleagues furiously, as if the offending article should have first been delivered into his hands. The three inquisitors crowded around the parchment, holding corners to keep it flat.
It bears the High Inquisitor's seal, Seldom said. A forgery.
Dimion dismissed it with a wave.
The abbess once held that office herself. She kept her seal and...
It's Gemmon's seal, Agica said. And His signature.
I'm not so sure,
Brother Dimion rumbled.
There is also High Priest Nevis's seal and signature.
Ajika raised her head and looked towards Glass.
Why would both men give their permission for heresy?
Selden stood up, staring at Glass in confusion.
And why would you keep it secret?
Glass tilted her head and allowed herself a smile.
How else to get a full Inquisition trial beneath the roof of the Emperor's sister, and the woman herself, in chains, before the rail?
Laughter rose from the Lord's bench at this, some of it simple amusement, some shocked, some nervous and confused. Here and there, a hint of realization dawned. Carvan Jotsis saw it, and his eyes widened.
Shirzal shook her arms in an attempt to be rid of the silver chain. Judges!
Glass barked out the word.
Your witness has not been given permission to depart.
Ajika stood now, then Dimion dwarfing her.
What is the meaning of this nonsense?
He boomed.
Honorable Shazal.
Ajika ignored her fellow judge.
You will remain, please.
She waved to Sarah, who, white-faced, placed herself in Shazal's path. All around the margins of the great chamber, members of Shazal's personal guard exchanged confused glances. Glass bowed her head.
I collected you three judges. You did not collect them, I collected them,
Pelter shouted.
I knew where they would be and when,
Glass said.
I chose the time of our departure. Thus, I selected them. I chose the time of our departure.
A note of desperation had entered Pelter's voice. He looked to Shazal for support.
I arrested her.
Glass looked up.
And I chose when to take the action that made you arrest me.
She had thought Zol might go after Nona immediately, but the girl had waited until Kettle left, perhaps knowing that Kettle would not have let Nona go without some means of finding her again. Even then, Zol had hesitated. She had come to Glass seeking wisdom, and Glass had told her to follow her instinct.
I wanted you to bring me here. But why?
Pelter, almost helpless now.
No court of the Inquisition could ever be set up beneath the roof of the Emperor's sister without her invitation,
Glass said.
And neither the Emperor nor the immediate members of his family can be put on trial anywhere but beneath a Lancis roof.
But Shazal is not on trial,
Brother Dimion blustered.
She will be once Sister Ajika has her arrested and charged.
Glass turned her gaze on Ajika.
Shazal's agent took the church's only ship heart. The case for suspicion is simple and well documented. Under questioning, she will admit her guilt and return what was stolen.
Glass had lied when she said that she had chosen the judges. Pelter had been slower to act than anticipated, and their journey east more convoluted. However, Ajika and Selden had been high on Glass's list of possibles, and she had prayed they would be found. She had also been aware that Brother Dimion would be a likely inclusion, since the last report on the man had him held by his duties on the path Pelter would almost certainly follow. In a minority, however, Brother Dimion was an asset, his loyalty to Shazal well known. A decade earlier, after Glass had made her decision to leave her high office atop the Tower of Inquiry, but before she had announced it, she had set several acts of forward planning in motion. Prime amongst those acts was the fall from grace of certain of her most loyal inquisitors, Selden and Ajika among them. Their arguments and growing mistrust were both public and false, a deception agreed upon by both parties. Former holders of any high office were vulnerable both to their immediate successor and to all those subordinates who resented them. What better insulation against future extremists than to promote to the top of any list of enemies men and women who held secret loyalty to her?
There's no evidence to base any such charge upon!
Dimion thumped the table before him. Both Shazal's bodyguards, who had flanked her at the proxy throne, now moved to stand behind Sarah. Saphira was the first to reach her, one hand resting on a sword hilt. Glass ignored the open threat.
"Evidence abounds, Brother Dimion. Shazal's own employee, placed at Sweet Mercy on her insistence, stole the Shipheart. Were we talking about anyone other than the Emperor's sister and the prime instigator of the Inquisition? They would have been arrested and put to the question years ago. Only the impossibility of doing so has prevented formal accusation."
"If this is true..."
Agica placed each word with care, as if thinking furiously.
"Why were we three judges not informed?"
"Yes," Brother Dimion demanded. "We cannot be expected to put our host to the question without instruction from Gemon himself. It's nonsense to suppose he would desire such a trial, and yet issue no orders."
Glass appreciated the judge's reluctance. Their authority might stand on firm legal ground, but they had only the fact that a full third of the Sis stood witness to ensure their safety. Had the party been concluded by the time Glass was brought to trial, as she had begun to desperately fear that it might, then Shazal would very likely have had Glass and the Inquisitors quietly murdered, rather than submit to their inspection and judgment. Saphira's proximity to Sarah was a reminder of how swiftly the two Inquisition guards could be overcome. A warning not to take false comfort in the presence of two armed church enforcers. Glass motioned for the three judges to take their seats again, and to her surprise, they did.
"No word of this possibility was sent out, because Shazal has too many ears among the Inquisition. Any communication would risk discovery. If even a hint of such an idea had reached the palace, you three would never have received a formal invitation to enter the premises. Brother Pelter would have taken me to the Emperor's palace instead, and hoped for a swift conviction before the wider church and the Tower of Inquiry became involved."
Glass was willing to bet a very large sum that had Brother Dimion received word of the plot, then Shazal would have known of it shortly after. Brother Dimion would remain Shazal's creature, but fortunately, Inquisition judicial panels could conduct all their business with a simple majority. A unanimous vote was never required.
"And we are now expected to..."
Brother Seldom stared at Glass. The falling out between Glass and her former disciples had been all about her safety in the years to come. Now she had stood them both at a precipice, where it was very much their safety at risk.
"You want us to?"
"You're expected to do your duty, brother. You have the opportunity to right a great wrong perpetrated against the church. High Priest Nevis and High Inquisitor Gemon set seal and signature to the dispensation before you exactly to win you this chance to act. The ancestors' eyes are upon you."
Sister Agica stood. She made a slow turn towards the outrage on Shazal's face, and, with reluctance, as if each word pained her, she said her piece.
"Honorable Shazal, you are hereby under arrest, a prisoner of the Inquisition, charged with theft of a holy relic."
Chapter 40.
"The heartbeat is changing."
Nona stopped in the narrow passage, her hand raised before her, fingers spread as if she could feel the Shipheart's pulse.
"You're sure?"
Kettle limping up behind her.
"Why would it change?"
Clara turned back, impatient, the lantern swinging. Nona didn't know. The beat of the Shipheart at Sweet Mercy hadn't changed from the moment she first learned to sense it to the moment it was taken. Without an answer, she posed her own question.
"You said these tunnels connect with Shazal's palace,
How are we going to get away? There are entrances further down the Grand Pass. We'll get you past the guards somehow and you can be on your way. Bye-bye, Tetragode. Hello, sweet Mercy. Kettle's been stabbed in the leg. She can't walk down a mountain. Nona wasn't sure she could either, though her strength was returning slowly. She won't have to. If you get across the pass, there's a road with plenty of traffic. You can get a ride on a wagon. You'll be back before the Abyss. Clara started to walk away again. How steep is this pass? Can Kettle make it a... Nona stopped. Back before the Abyss? It's pretty steep in places, but if you choose your route carefully, a three-legged donkey could do it. Clara quickened her pace, her speech quickening too. Clara! Nona stood her ground. Clara turned, face innocent, body guilty. Yes? What about the Abyss? Oh. Clara lowered the lantern, leaving her face in shadow. She's at the palace. Doing what? Kettle and Nona asked together. Part of Nona feared that Abyss Glass would be hunting her for the church. She pushed the thought aside. The Abyss had sent Kettle to help her escape. The Inquisition brought her, Clara said. There's to be a trial tonight. We have to save her. Nona advanced on Clara, jaw set. Do I have to repeat everything I said about going after Zol? Clara hung her head. Look, I know it's bad, but I'm sure the old girl will wriggle out of it, and you can't fight your way through Shazal's guard any more than you could fight your way through the Tetragode. She has an army gathered. A whole army. To hold the pass against the Skithrow, Kettle said. We have to go after her, Nona said. Clara faked a cough. Zol? The Abyss isn't Zol, Nona shouted. She's just an old woman. She must be 50. We have to go after her. Tell her, Kettle. She rounded on the nun. Kettle, deadly pale where the shadows ebbed, frowned and said nothing. What? Nona widened her eyes. It's the Abyss, Kettle. I know. Kettle leaned against the rock, taking the weight off her injured leg, hissing in relief. But she gave me this long, great speech about how we weren't to fight the Inquisition. About how, if we started fighting them, then where would it stop? She said it wouldn't stop, and that the church and the convent would be torn apart, and that the ancestor would weep to see it. That's just words, Nona said helplessly. We have to do something. Even if we could, Nona, the Abyss wouldn't thank us for it. She would turn herself over to the authority of the church at the first opportunity. Kettle shook her head as if imagining Abyss Glass's condemnation. We have to go. It's what she would want for us. We'll keep her in our hearts. She offered the last thought, as if for comfort, as if Nona were still a child. Our hearts? The corner of an understanding angled into Nona's mind. She held out her hands, one back the way they had come, towards the Tetragode, one to the front, towards Shazal's palace and the Grand Pass. We need to move. Clara shuffled her feet. Nona. Kettle hobbled forward, shadows swirling. That's why the beat changed when we travelled. Nona spread her fingers. I got more of one and less of the other. What are you talking about? Clara, curious despite herself. Hearts, Nona said. There are two ship hearts, not one. The first is behind us, the other ahead. She looked at Kettle. It's our ship heart, from Sweet Mercy. I'm sure of it. How sure? Kettle set a hand to Nona's shoulder. It doesn't matter how sure she is, Clara threw up her arms, bashing one on the rock and cursing. You're not going to get it back with a wounded nun and a sick novice. I know it's there. Nona ignored Clara. Take us to the palace, Clara. Kettle advanced on the girl. We can't leave. Not going to happen. Clara backed away. If we recover the ship heart, the Abbess will pardon your crimes, Clara. As Kettle spoke, the shadows thickened around them, pressing the lantern's light back towards its source. But you won't recover it, Clara said, hand straying towards her hip. At best you'll die. If you're captured, they'll get my name from you. But it will be obvious enough who helped you, even if you're killed quickly. Get me close to the ship heart. Nona remembered the awful power of the thing, seen and felt through Hessa. If I lay hands upon it, nobody will stop me. Kettle frowned at that, almost spoke, but bit back the words. We have to get it back. Any price is worth paying. Clara made to skip away, but Kettle proved too fast, seizing her arm. Please, Clara. Nona fixed her eyes on her friend's face. When Nona had shared Kettle's mind, she had felt the strength of the compulsion Zol used. Being twisted like that by Zol's will had woken in Nona an understanding of how to better use her own touch of Marjal empathy. We need to do this! Nona's guilt at manipulating her friend stood in the shadow of their cause and the memory of betrayal in another cave, years ago. She let the strength of her conviction flow through the cracks in Clara's personality, cracks that she knew of old, ambition, pride, and a need for challenge. I don't know where the ship heart is. Clara started to weaken. And Yisht might be with it. I don't want to meet her. We need you, Clara, Nona said. Aren't you tired of being a tool for these people? I want you back. Clara frowned. Chazal probably keeps it in her treasury. And you know where that is? Kettle asked. Clara's frown vanished. Of course! Having given Clara some semblance of conviction, Nona found her own fading as they approached the palace. She couldn't reach the path again so quickly. It would be many hours before she would be able even to see it. How they could hope to penetrate Shazal's stronghold so deeply without being overwhelmed by her guards, Nona had no idea. And without the ship heart, there was no chance of saving the Abbess. We're close now, Clara said. There will be guards up ahead. They know me. You two, they'll put chains on. Nona frowned. She felt a little better, but hardly fighting fit. Pain and sickness had been replaced by tiredness, hunger, and a fierce thirst. Her ribs still troubled her, but were perhaps only bruised rather than broken. Her nose stung where Lanotaxis had cut her. That particular sting made her angry, though, and anger chased tiredness into the background. How many? I don't want to kill them unless I have to. What? Kiot had held silent ever since the aftermath of Nona's pathwalking, but now he spoke up.
Kill them! They're the enemy!
Normally four on duty with 20 more close at hand. They're quality too, veterans. Shazal doesn't trust the Noiguan any more than she has to. There are sigils on the walls that they say can be used to collapse them if there's an attack. So we make our entry unseen, Kettle said. Because with all the Noiguan in the whole world, connected to her palace's basements, Shazal won't have defences against stealthy intrusion. Clara rolled her eyes. It can't be done. I just brought you here to prove it. Kettle and Nona exchanged glances. Their faces shadowed, just the edges caught in the glow of Clara's lantern. They shared a nod. Even without a thread bond, Nona knew they both would have understood. We'll just have to kill them all, Nona said.
Yes!
Kiot flushed across her chest, rising along both collarbones.
Yes.
Clara snorted. You'd be lucky to take one down before they got you, Nona. And Kettle would be lucky to reach them at all. Did the Noiguan not teach you all that shade work can do, Clara? Kettle closed a pale hand into a black fist, night running liquid from her fingers. I may be wounded, but my shadow can still rend. Clara shrugged. Pray too, if you like. You'll still both be dead before the reinforcements get there. Nona knew it to be true, and knew that Kettle shared the understanding. It didn't matter. With the Abbess and the Shipheart both in reach, no sister, grey or red, would abandon them. The nun took Clara's advice and bent her head to pray. Nona resisted the urge to join Kettle's devotions, instead looking around the bare tunnel for inspiration. What we really need, she said, is a diversion. Whatever Clara had to say about that, Nona never had the chance to find out. The echoing thunder that reached down the tunnel from the palace above took the words from both their mouths. Chapter 41 Abbess Glass.
You propose to torture a confession from me? In my own house?
Shazal's neck burned red above the white froth of her collar. She looked furious rather than scared.
There are serious charges against you, Shazal.
Sister Ajika aimed her dark-eyed regard at the woman, slowly warming to her new role.
Your employee stole an object of incalculable value, exploiting a position that she was only able to obtain at your insistence. Your implicit guarantee of her good conduct demands that you answer our questions. The same investigation would be carried out in any other case.
You had best vote upon it, then. I have pressing matters to attend to.
Shazal waved Ajika on as if impatient.
A great many more guests are expected. You've nothing to offer in your defense?
Ajika raised a brow.
No, and I don't plead guilty, either.
Shazal leaned across her rail to look past the judges at glass.
Nor special dispensation!
Shazal looked entirely too self-composed for Glass's liking, though she suspected that the woman's self-confidence was, like the colour of her eyes, a thing that could not be dimmed. Glass thought that Shazal would wear that same look of utter confidence were she to topple from a cliff. She'd be staring down the rocks even as they rushed up to greet her.
We will consider our verdict, then.
Sister Ajika pushed back her chair.
This court can find you guilty, innocent, or require that you be put to questioning.
To either side of Ajika, brothers Seldom and Dimion rotated their chairs so that all three faced each other. They leaned in close, heads almost touching. Ajika began to address her two fellow judges, leading to a swift exchange of heated whispers. Glass had some sympathy. She had put them in a difficult position. Either follow their obvious duty and risk the ire of the Empire's most powerful woman within her own walls, or ignore their duty and deal the Inquisition a crushing blow before the assembled leaders of the Sis, while simultaneously losing the chance to recover one of the Church's most treasured possessions. Even arguing over their decision was a loss of face and authority. Dimion would most likely opt for innocent, whatever evidence was presented to him. But thankfully, a majority was all that was required, and there was no way that Ajika and Seldom would not require further investigation. Glass watched and listened, catching only the occasional word but getting a good sense of the direction of the discussion. As expected, Ajika and Seldom were incredulous at Dimion's refusal to agree to subjecting Shazal to questioning, and both sounded as if they were getting exasperated by their failure to persuade him otherwise. Then, something unexpected. Pauses from Seldom. Interjections where he seemed angry at Ajika, and from her, disbelief. A cold, crawling sensation advanced up Glass's spine. Could Seldom, somehow, have been bought off? He'd always seemed the perfect inquisitor. No family to pressure, an ascetic's disdain for money. She had staked her life and more on the man's integrity. How could he... Glass looked away from the huddle of judges and scanned the audience. She found Joelle swiftly, the girl's golden hair unmatched among the crowd save in one place. Lines of concentration crossed her usually flawless brow, and her fingers, raised before her chest, twitched. Glass couldn't see the threads haloed around Seldom, nor appreciate the skill with which Joelle was changing the man's mind, but she knew what was happening.
"We should vote!"
Seldom, his voice strained but decisive.
"We should!"
Dimion, almost crowing with victory. Glass's jaw tightened, the cold shock of defeat washed through her. She would die here, after dinner entertainment for these overfed lords.
"But, wait, I'm confused."
Seldom lifted both hands to massage his temples. At the far end of the guest benches, Arabella Jotsis had raised her hands, plucking the air before her, face screwed tight with focused effort. The abbess knew from Sister Pan's reports that Ara's threadworking potential was smaller than Joelle's, and her skills far less developed. However, undoing threadwork takes less talent than the original manipulation. The human mind resists tampering and is always trying to return to its natural state. Among the glittering crowd, Joelle sensed the interference and redoubled her efforts, her jaw taking on a determined set, face darkening. Brother Seldom, caught in the storm, allowed himself to be turned first by Dimion's arguments, then by Ajika's, then by Dimion's. Slowly, though, he seemed to be falling back beneath Joelle's influence.
"Empress sister, we just can't!"
A loud thump and squeal of outrage snapped Glass's attention back to the guest benches. Joelle lay sprawled in saffron skirts and cream lace, too stunned even to draw breath for a proper scream. The spot on the bench where her bottom had so recently resided lay empty and gleaming. Darla was just straightening up after using her height to lean in from the back, crowding past several outraged matrons, and then to deliver a hefty shove between Joelle's shoulder blades.
"General Rathon, control your daughter!"
This from Joan Namsis, rising from the Lord's benches. By the time Darla had been scolded and two palace guards had escorted her from the hall, while Joelle was restored to her seat by several fussing daughters of the Sis, the judging panel had reached their verdict. Shirzal regarded them with a face like thunder. Ajika straightened in her seat. Brothers Dimion and Seldom pulled back.
"By a majority decision, we find good cause for Shazal Lansis to be put to moderate questioning by an officer of the Inquisition."
Brother Pelter blinked at that, as if unable to comprehend the scale of the change of direction so recently delivered upon him. He would get to use the skills and tools of his trade, just not against the person he had believed would be given into his care. Shirzal leaned back from the rail, her anger replaced by a speculative look. Glass imagined that she was weighing up her options. She must have realized by now that all she had to do was hold out until her guests had departed, something that she could make happen quite swiftly. Then, with her lordly audience back on the westward roads, she could take matters into her own hands. Later, a suitable story could be spun, one of innocence declared, followed by a tragic accident involving returning judges. Quite possibly brothers Dimion and Pelter might survive such an accident and corroborate Shirzal's version of events.
"I have a second document,"
Glass raised both her voice and her right elbow, gesturing to her side with her head.
That will save the Honorable Shazal the distress of questioning under duress.
She saw Shazal's brows rise at that. Even a woman as redoubtable as the Emperor's sister must have had some concerns about Inquisition. Moderate duress extended to whippings of various types, along with the stressing of joints and the application of various mechanical devices to the hands and feet. It sounded unpleasant in theory, and in practice was fairly horrific. Melchior came across to extract the second parchment, which was tied with ribbons to Glass's side. A tiny muslin bag hung from the document, sewn to the lower edge. He took it to the judges, who crowded together, devouring the words. Attica pulled the bag free and tipped 5 small black tablets into the palm of her hand. She pursed her lips.
"They look so insignificant." "A work of genius," Glass said. "The combined efforts of the Academy and the Church's own Mistress Shade. Sadly, they are frighteningly expensive and very time-consuming to prepare. It would be nice to believe that such wonders might one day remove the need for any to suffer in the Inquisition's quest for the truth."
Sister Agica straightened and addressed the lords.
"High Inquisitor Gemmon has set his signature and seal against this authorization to use these truth pills in the trial of Shazal. This will allow the Inquisition to avoid inflicting physical harm upon its prime instigator, which would be highly regrettable were she to prove innocent of the charges against her. Furthermore, it will permit a swift and public resolution of the matter with the Sis as witness. And
poison," Shazal shouted. "I will not be fed poison from that woman's hand."
Sister Agica picked a pill from her palm between thumb and finger.
"The High Inquisitor's own seal attests to their safety, but I am sure that the abbess will not mind taking one herself to set your mind at ease."
Glass minded very much. She understood Shazal's objections perfectly. For a woman whose power was built upon secrets, the compulsion to speak the truth was indeed poison.
"I would be delighted, Sister Agica."
She smiled and nodded. Melchior returned with one of the black pills in his hand. He raised it towards Glass's mouth.
"I request that only Judge Agica be permitted to ask me questions, and that only those that she plans to put to the prisoner. I know many of the Church's most holy secrets, and will not be able to resist betraying them if asked inappropriate questions."
Sister Agica inclined her head.
"A reasonable request."
Glass opened her mouth, then closed it.
"I'm told the taste of this mixture is incredibly bitter. If I choke or spit, it isn't because I am being poisoned."
A smile towards Shazal. She opened her mouth again. The taste when Melchior placed the pill upon her tongue was far worse than anything Glass had imagined. She clamped her jaw tight, sucked her cheeks in hard, and screwed her eyes shut, willing herself not to vomit or cry out. It was shouts and exclamations of shock that forced Glass to open her eyes. When the commotion reached through her distress, she wondered if the pill had perhaps done something ghastly to her appearance. Then, on focusing her vision, she wondered if Apple's concoction really had poisoned her and the scene before her was hallucination. Sarah had fallen to her knees, hands at her throat, crimson with the blood pulsing between her fingers. Saphira stood behind her, knife held steady, its edge scarlet. Shazal had shaken off her chain and moved from the rail. Several of her house guards flanked her as she approached her throne. Glass spat out a bitter black mess from her mouth, pressing her puckered lips into a grim line. Such an attack had always been a possibility, but she had felt that the weight of probability lay with Shazal throwing herself upon her brother's mercy. If Crucicle had any murderous instincts towards his siblings, then they had certainly given him enough past excuses to act upon. Likely this time he would have banished Shazal to the ice. The ice being the symbolic punishment, the banishment real. From the ice, no doubt burdened with funds, Shazal would have been able to return to some other country along the corridor and live a comfortable life in exile. That was how Glass had anticipated events unfolding. However, she had always known that the chance Shazal would throw caution to the wind and take to violence was a real one. Shazal reached her throne and turned in an imperious swirl of white.
My friends, lords of the Sis, I brought you here not just for the pleasure of your company, but to make an announcement.
Sarah pitched forward with a clatter and lay still in the spreading pool of her blood. Melkir, ashen-faced, bared his steel and went to stand with the judges, placing himself between them and Saphira.
The moon is falling.
Shazal stood before her throne, hands moving to underscore her words.
The ice is pressing, closing its jaws upon the Empire, squeezing all of us from the lowest peasant on the margins to each of you, my brothers and sisters of the Sis. The same ice advances on the Derns, and on the Skithrol, and on their most distant borders. It presses equally on the witch cults of Baron and the Kingdom of Ald.
Lord Jotsus stood up from his chair.
Your servant just murdered an Inquisition enforcer. I demand an explanation, not a lesson in geography.
My brother cannot save this empire.
Shazal carried on as if Lord Jotsus were still silent and seated.
His armies can barely contain the Derns. Our coast is washed by the Marn, but 3 miles out it might as well be called the Dern Sea.
She gestured east, waving an arm towards the banqueting hall.
When the Skithrol come, they will not be stopped. These mountains have been all of the Empire's strength in the east, but they are no longer tall enough to hold back this tide.
The scattered protests at Shazal's assertion rose above a background of worried silence. Word of the Skithrol numbers had been spreading westward like a plague.
The moon is falling.
Shazal raised her arms.
Listen to the words. We say, when the moon falls, and by that saying we mean never. But I'll repeat myself. The moon is falling.
She scanned the room, her stare challenging any dissent.
The moon is falling, but it has not fallen yet. It will fly a lifetime more, and another perhaps. But in that time the northern ice will hasten its advance towards the southern. What do the Skithrol want with us, my lords? Why brave the harsh slopes of the Grampians? Why spend their blood here, instead of racing across the hills of the Ald?
Shazal allowed no time for answers.
The Ark can control the moon. She who controls the moon owns the corridor. Adoma, Battle Queen, knows this. She also knows that my brother would break the Ark asunder before he let it fall to those who had destroyed our empire, and rightly so.
Lord Jotsus, still on his feet, found his voice again.
If the Ark controls the moon, why is Crucicle not exploiting such a power?
How could the moon be used to save us?
Lord Taxus asked from his seat. If Glass was any judge, it was a question posed to allow Shazal to answer. Lord Taxus had been alone in his lack of surprise at the unfolding of recent events.
The Ark can aim the moon,
Shazal said.
It can make the moon's focus spend more time in one part of the corridor, less in another.
With such control, we could push back the ice from the Empire.
And the price?
Lord Jotsis demanded. Somewhere else the ice would advance more swiftly, Shazal replied. From the muttering behind Lord Jotsis, it seemed that many of the Sith didn't consider this too high a cost.
Why then does Crucible not use this power?
Lord Taxus presented Carvan Jotsis's first point as if it were his own.
The Emperors have dwelled in the Ark for centuries.
Shazal acknowledged the question with a nod.
The Ark needs to send energy to the moon so that it may flex and turn. To provide sufficient energy, 4 shipparts are required. And because of an ancient covenant set to ensure unity of purpose between the tribes, they must be the hearts of ships from each of the 4 tribes. Without these shipparts, the Ark cannot even be opened.
A ripple of understanding ran through the crowd, followed by confusion.
There are only 3 shipparts in all of the Empire.
Lord Glossus, her voice rusty with age and querulous.
And even if you have stolen from the church, you do not own the other 2.
Strength is built from alliances, Lord Glossus.
Shazal exposed her shark smile.
The strength of the great bow comes from the alliance of different woods, each with their own contribution to make.
She turned to the judges.
I said I would not plead guilty or claim dispensation. But I did not plead innocent. The truth is that I ordered the shipheart taken from Sweet Mercy Convent. I state it now with no shame. Guilty of taking from a handful of nuns, isolated on a lonely rock, something of incalculable benefit to all of the Empire. Guilty of putting all our futures before the elitism of the grey and the red, and before the selfish abstractions of holy witches.
Shazal walked behind her throne, facing the room over its high back.
The Noi Guin have a Marjal shipheart.
A muttered discontent rose immediately. Many families among the Sis had lost members to the Noi Guin. The deaths were often commissioned by other families. Most of the remaining casualties were ordered in-house as a means of advancing personal prospects within a family.
If you would see an end to the Noi Guin, Shazal said, I know of a way that will succeed where hundreds of years and thousands of troops have failed. Bring them into the fold. Let them take their place at the high table as the Noesis, and there will be no more Noi Guin. Let them add their shipheart to our cause.
That's 2.
Old Lord Glossus hunched within her robes despite the heat. Glass found herself sweating with the crackle and roar from the hearth behind her. She began to unwind her chain, though she had no hope of escape.
2.
Shazal held up a pair of fingers.
And Adoma has the last 2 required.
She raised the remaining fingers on her hand.
You plan to invade Skithrow?
A lord at the back barked a laugh.
I plan an alliance.
Shazal lowered her hand.
With the Battle Queen?
Carvan Jotsis's outrage had nowhere left to take him, so he sat down. Others rose to their feet, many of them, cries of treachery on their lips.
You would sell us into Skithrow chains?
Lord Mensis cried. Shouts of heresy from the judge's bench.
Adoma will provide 2 shipparts, and her war clans will clear our path to verity.
Shazal said, her voice rising above the swell of complaint.
My brother will be faced with 2 choices,
where before he had only one, though he will not admit it. The first choice is to have the Scythrol take the Empire under their control, have their heresy in every church of the Ancestor, have our people enslaved, our nobility overthrown. Surely Crucicle would ruin the Ark to deny them such a prize, but it would be a hollow victory, one battle in a lost war. This is currently his only choice. The Scythrol cannot be held. The second choice is to accept me as the new emperor, maintaining the Lancis dynasty. To take the offer of Adoma Shipharts and by adding them to our own, to gain dominion over the moon itself. Adoma will, through the sigil work of her mages, retain the ability to destroy her two Shipharts from her own throne, and in doing so destroy the Ark. This is her assurance of our good faith. But we will control the moon, and in exchange for its use in preserving Scythrol and in furthering Adoma's interests to the east, she will withdraw her forces. Our borders will be secured, our future ensured for generations to come, our honor restored. We will let the ice crush Dern, and the moon will burn their ports to ash. And you, my friends, by joining your forces to my advance, will ensure that the flower of the Empire survives this crisis, and that your position as prime among the Sis is assured, favored by my throne. The shouts of protest continued, but began to ebb. Many lords falling to intense discussion with their neighbors. Glass knew enough of folk to see that the tide had turned, and all that remained was for Shazal's guests to realize it themselves. "The only casualties that are unavoidable stand before us," Shazal recaptured the lord's attention. "The Inquisition will never accept a Scythrol alliance. I will need to make an end of the Abbess and her organization." She waved a hand at the judges. "Can any among you claim that the Inquisition is a thing of worth, an asset that should not be sacrificed in the cause of greater good?" And Abbess Glass, her tongue possessed by a poison that compelled the truth, had to answer. "No." Glass found her voice again as Shazal's guards advanced on the judge's bench. "The Inquisition may be a price worth paying, Shazal, but your assassin killed an innocent child when stealing from the Church of the Ancestor. A child's life was too high a cost, as are all the lives that will be spent when the Scythrol hordes sweep along the roads to Verity. The Battle Queen may withdraw, she may not. But even if the hordes do return to the east, it will be like a storm tide retreating, leaving devastation." Glass spoke nothing but the truth, and she spoke it with the confidence of her office, exerting a magic all of her own, one that stilled the chatter of the lords, and even made Shirzal's soldiers pause in their advance on Melkir. "All this blood spilled for your ambitions, Shazal. If this myth of Shipharts and wielding the moon were true, then Crucicle himself could strike such a bargain with Adoma. If you shared your knowledge with him, no Scythrol would have reason to cross the Grampains, if it were true." "Well, take her!" Shazal urged her guards on. Melkir leveled his sword, but Saphira moved faster than the eye, stepping around the blade and locking her right leg behind his left to send him clattering to the floor. Glass spoke on, even as the guards closed around her. "And all the peoples of the corridor are children of the Ancestor, whether they know it or not, whatever borders enclose them. Crucicle would not use the moon as a weapon of aggression. It is our gift from those far deeper in the Ancestor's great tree than we. The Emperor could seek ways to better employ the moon's blessing and to deter others from attack. The Empire could become the jewel on Abath's belt, not a dark and murderous master, condemning whole nations to icy ruin.
Two guards took Glass's arm, seeming unsure what to do next, while she kept on addressing their mistress.
Your plan has much in it that is good, Shazal. What it does not require is you. No part of the greater good requires you to sit as emperor.
Silence the woman, Shazal shouted. Or must I do it, my...
The sound that overwhelmed all others was an enormous and physical thing, as if a giant's hammer had struck the palace. Not against the outer walls, but here, within the chamber. Chairs and their occupants flew in all directions, centered on the area where the Sis families had been seated. Cracks wide enough to receive fingers, even whole hands, ran out across the marbled floor, a cloud of powdered stone rising from the impact site. Motion behind and above the scene caught Glass's eye, a large figure driving smaller ones from behind a screen in the musician's gallery. Darla. Her opponents were archers, crossbows useless at such range. Their weapons must have been trained on the one guest that Shazal knew had the potential to be her greatest physical threat. Slipping away during the trial to deal with Ara's watchers would have been an impressive feat for someone closer to 7 foot tall than to 6, but Darla had managed to get herself escorted out, saving the need for subterfuge. The dust began to settle. In its midst, a figure on one knee, one hand to the floor, a woman in the tatters of a dress. The fabric, indeed the whole of her form, shuddering, shifting, warping, as she struggled to contain her power. Arabella Jotsis. The archers must have been instructed to shoot her at any sign that she had begun to walk the path. The last of their number fell, wailing from the gallery. And Ara stood, the glow around her limbs and torso almost too bright to look upon. Chapter 42. The detonation up in the main levels of the palace drew all the guards from their subterranean barracks, leaving just 3 of the 4 who had been on duty in the corridor.
If they get to the sigil work on the walls, we're done for, Clara said. I don't know what it does, but Shazal puts enough faith in it not to have a gate between her and the Nói Gúin.
And we can be pretty sure there are sigils there that will strip away shadow work, Nona said.
So you go up there and incapacitate them, Clara.
Kettle waved her on.
They'll let you get close, then... I'm not sure I could stop them all in time,
Clara frowned.
Jab a pin varnished with luck up into them, Nona said, remembering a certain cave and unable to keep a trace of bitterness from her voice. They're dosed with standard venoms every month to keep their tolerance high. Shazal knows the Nói Gúin's tricks. Besides, I don't want them to know it was me.
Nona unwrapped the chain around her waist. She had fixed it there as a belt for the remains of her prison smock, and to provide a place to thrust the spare blades picked up after the battle at the cell block. She set down her weapons and gave the chain to Kettle. Next, she crossed her arms, back to back, the knuckles of one hand resting against the inside of the elbow of the other.
Bind me.
Kettle started to wrap both limbs together, turn after turn of the chain.
I used this ploy with Zol at the entrance to the Tetragode. I don't think it will work here, though. I look like a lightless.
That's why I'm going alone, Nona said.
Kettle finished binding Nona's arms and tucked the end of the chain away.
If Clara doesn't think she can disable the 3 of them quickly enough, what makes you think you can?
That's right,
Clara scowled. I'm as fast as you are,
These men aren't pushovers. It just takes a moment for them to touch the right sigil, and then... because I want to kill them.
Nona let Keot take her tongue, her voice becoming a snarl, something...